Parshas Kisisa. So we still have Purim very much in the air, and we'd like to discuss something that is Hashem and Inyan, which concerns both the Parsha and Kisisa, and we'll try Be'ez Hashem to connect it also to the Chag of Purim. Predominantly, what we're about to discuss, we actually mentioned in a previous year, during Yom Neroyim time, and we discussed the whole concept of Hashem Hu Elohim, Hashem Hu Elohim. So we'll mention that, and then we'll try and bring it back with one or two additions, and we'll try and bring it back, but is Hashem, to Purim. Of course, central in Parshas Kisisa, central is really the Parsha of the Eagle. So let's begin with a very bizarre medrash. This medrash is in Yalkut Reuveni, as quoted by the Ohr HaChaim HaKadosh. Now we'll soon see, Be'ez Hashem, coming up, in what context the Ohr HaChaim quotes this medrash. But either way, quotes the medrash he does. And the medrash in the Yalkut Reuveni says, strangely enough, that the eagle that was made by Klal Yisrael was actually half an eagle, or a shoyer, and half a chamor, a donkey. Which is obviously very, very bizarre. What does that mean, that they made it half egel and half chamor? In particular, because if you look in that medrash, it says, in the head it was like a shoyer, and in the back, thank you, and in the back it was like a chamor. And the lashon of the medrash, in fact, is va'al kilayim zu. And it was on this kilayim, this mixture, this forbidden mixture, that Klal Yisrael said that this is our God, etc., etc. So not only was there this mix, this hybrid of shoyer and chamor, but the medrash emphasizes that when they bow down to it, that it was the fact that it was a kilayim. A kilayim is a forbidden mixture, and that's what they bow down to. And if that's going to be our first question of the night, what is the significance? Why did they make the egel, half egel and half chamor?
Did they make egel? Or was it through the golden?
But clearly that was what they had in mind, obviously, yeah. So, and that's proven by the fact that the Medrash stresses that it was on this kilayim, if it just so happened to emerge that way, then that wouldn't be significant. So clearly it was the kilayim, it was the mixture, the hybrid of egel and chamor, which is what they bow down to, and clearly that must be significant. Question number two, of course we know that as Moshe Rabbeinu descends from Har Sinai holding the Luchos, he sees what's happening down below and he smashes the Luchos. And in fact, Rashi tells us right at the end of the Torah and it's a Gemara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu thanked him for it. And he says, Yasher Koach, well done on breaking the Luchos. So this now becomes our second question. Why indeed did he break the Luchos? There were plenty of other Averis that Klal Yisrael committed, and we don't find that the Luchos were smashed on those occasions. And it was very obviously unsatisfactory to say, well, because over here he happened to be holding the Luchos at the time. There obviously must be a reason why, upon serving this Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu considered Klal Yisrael no longer worthy or compatible with the Luchos, and therefore he broke them, complimented and thanked by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but nonetheless we need to understand why indeed did he break the Luchos. Now, before we answer those questions, let's just ask one or two more questions. If we turn to the Haftarah of this week's Parasha, Parashas Kisisa, now this week happens to be that the Parasha is Parashas Poro, but the regular Haftarah to Parashas Kisisa is the great dramatic story in Sefer Melachim about Eliyahu HaNovi and the false prophets of the Avodah Zorah, the Baal. Now we know the story, very dramatic story, just in very brief history and background. The Melech at the time of Klal Yisrael was Achav, the wicked king Achav, who himself was a tremendous idol worshipper. Not only that, he succeeded in also causing all of Klal Yisrael to serve Avodah Zarah as well. Now it happens to be, Chazal tell us, that he himself was Chozer B'tshuva at the end of the days, but it was too late. The damage had already been done, and Avodah Zarah was rampant all over Klal Yisrael. In particular, the Avodah Zarah called the Baal. So just as you had the Nevi'im of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lahavdil Elef Havdolos, you had the false prophets, the Nevi'i Habal. Achav HaMelech, not satisfied with spreading Avodah Zarah in Klal Yisrael, slaughtered him and his wicked wife Yezebel, the Nevi'im, such that the remaining Nevi'im, 150 of them, were hidden by Avodah. It was a terrible situation in Klal Yisrael. So Eliyahu Navi makes a gezeira, he decrees that there should be no rainfall in Klal Yisrael as a punishment, specifically neged Achav and Avodah Zarah. 3 years into this terrible drought, then comes the great showdown, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Eliyahu Navi to the Har HaKarmel with 450 false prophets, the Nevi'i HaBaal. And we know how the story goes on. Firstly, Eliyahu Navi turns round to the Am and he says the famous line, Ad Mosai Atem Poischim Al Shei HaSeifim. How long can you be crossing two thresholds? And he says, Im Hashem Hu Aleikim, if Hashem is really the God, then Luchu Acharov, then go with him. The Im HaBaal, Luchu Acharov, then go with the Baal, but not both. The Nevi'i HaBaal then shecht their par, and they're waiting for the fire to descend. And they call and they shout, and we know Eliyahu Navi begins mocking them. He says, well, maybe your God is sleeping. Maybe shout a bit louder. To no avail. It was all miraculous, because eventually when it became Eliyahu Navi's turn, and he put his par on the Mizbeach, they actually had hidden under the Mizbeach one of the false prophets to put out the fire, just in case the fire would come down from heaven. What they didn't know was that the Mishpach was sent a snake to bite him and to kill him. So eventually, when miraculously Eliyahu Navi davens and the fire descends from the heaven and begins consuming the par, all the Nevi'i HaBaal are left scratching their heads. What happened to their agents tucked away under the Mizbeach, who was supposed to put out the fire? They didn't know he'd be long been killed by the snake. But either way, the miracle was performed, the nace was evident to all, and eventually they all cried out and they said, Hashem Hu Elohim, Hashem Hu Elohim. Now, firstly, it's very, very strange, very, very bizarre. What exactly did he mean to them when he said, if Hashem is Hashem, then go with him? That bit I understand. But what did he mean when he said, Ve'im la'baal, luchu acharov? If you want to go with the Baal, then go with the Baal. What does that mean? He was sanctioning them to go to Avodah Zarah. He's really giving them two choices? Either Hashem or the Baal? What does that mean? How can that possibly be explained? That's going to be our third question of the night. Now, to bring it back to the parasha, why indeed is that the Haftarah to our parasha? So simply speaking, we would say, because the Egel is all about Avodah Zarah, and that story is pretty much also about Avodah Zarah. But that's a little bit bizarre, because unfortunately the Navi is full of Avodah Zarah. Klal Yisrael served Avodah Zarah on more than one occasion, so why was it this story that's hand-picked, that's chosen to be the Haftarah? So if you look in the Levush addresses this, and he says, I'll tell you why. There is a very important parallel specifically about this story and the story of the Egel. Not just that it was all Avodah Zarah. He says, and these are his words, Toichachas Eliyahu, the rebuke of Eliyahu, dugmas, it is, parallels to Toichachas Moshe. Five words, Toichachas Eliyahu, dugmas Toichachas Moshe. I remember when I saw that Levush for the first time, I ran to the Sforim shelf, opened up my Chumash, and I'm thinking to myself, one moment, the Teichacha of Eliyahu, I know what that's referring to. We just mentioned it, when he gives all drasha, Ad Mosai Atem Poischim B'Shtei Se'ifim, how can you be bouncing across two thresholds? That's his Teichacha. But I looked in Parshas Kitisa, And I didn't find that Moshe Rabbeinu gave any tichacha to Klal Yisrael. So what's it referring to? What does it mean when it says the tichacha of Eliyahu HaNavi parallels the tichacha of Moshe Rabbeinu? Which tichacha? He didn't rebuke them in any way. That's going to be our fourth question of the night. So this is beginning to sound like Seder night with the four kashas, but here they are in summary. Number one, what does it mean that the Egel was made as a hybrid, part Egel, part Chamor? Question number two, why did Moshe Rabbeinu see it fit to break the Luchos? Question number three in the Haftarah, what did Eliyahu HaNavi mean when he says, Im Labal, go to the Baal? How can he possibly sanction that in any way? And question number four, what does the Levush mean when he says that Eliyahu HaNavi's Teichacha is parallel to Moshe Rabbeinu's Teichacha? Which particular Teichacha is this referring to? What did you say to Aaron? How does that parallel Eliyahu HaNavi's Teichacha? So we'll see. Let's have a look slowly. When it comes to the whole parasha of the Egel, of course, all the Meforshei HaTorah are at great pains to try and explain in some way what happened over here. It's completely superficial to suggest that you can just read the Psukim at face value. It's too incredulous. This is the nation that had gone through Mitzrayim, they saw the Eser Makos, and they saw Kriyas Yamsuf, they saw Makas Bechoros, they'd be makabel the Torah in miraculous fashion. So merely to read the Psukim and to say, well, apparently they just disregarded all of that, and they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want to reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu's dominion over us, and we're going for a different thing now, we're going for the ego. That's just not acceptable. How can that be? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So the Mefarshim, and we've discussed this on other occasions, whether it be the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra and others, they all explain, each one in his particular Nusach, but there is a common denominator between them both, and that is that they did not reject in any way HaKadosh Baruch Hu and service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chas v'shalom to think they just forgot everything that happened to them. Yitzias Mitzrayim was long forgotten, Kriyas Yamsuf long forgotten, Matan Torah long forgotten. That cannot be what's happening over here. Of course, they remained, as it were, slaves and servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were Avdei Hashem. They felt it necessary, albeit totally incorrectly, to combine that with the service of the ego. And the Farshim explained because they needed, at least so they thought, some sort of intermediary between them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu, as far as they were concerned, was not going to return, so they had in place of Moshe Rabbeinu, they had the Egel, each one with his Musaf. But the bottom line is that they in no way rejected service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, they were planning, flawed as this may be, to combine Avdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the same time, the Egel. At the same time, the Egel. In other words, they wanted to live a life of Avodah Zorah and Torah at the same time, and they didn't see the contradiction therein. They didn't see the contradiction therein. So maybe we have already answered, therefore, our first question. They made the Egel as a hybrid, half Shoir, half Egel, and half Chamor. What's the Egel? Mefarshim say that the Egel represents the free roaming calf, not Meshubad. And what does the Chamor represent? Chamor is the hard working animal. We know in Parshas Vayechi, the tribe of Yisachar, who are the tribe of Torah, what are they referenced to? Yisachar Chamor Gorem. They undertook the yoke of Torah by Yehila Mas Oved. The Egel and the Chamor represent the Avodah Zorah and the Torah being combined. And it was this Kilayim, as the Medrash says. That's why the Medrash emphasizes. It wasn't that you had Torah, but you also had Avodah Zorah. It was the joint, it was the combination of the two This was the life they were now planning on living, the life of part Egel, part Chamor. How can you have Avodah Zorah and Torah at the same time? Apparently they didn't see that as a contradiction. That was the Kilayim that they served. That was the Kilayim that they served. Moshe Rabbeinu is descending with the Luchos. Now there was a remarkable miracle that happened in the Luchos. And what was that? The Torah tells us in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Tezvav, Moshe Rabbeinu was holding the Luchos, Mizeh u'mizeh hem ksuvim. What does that mean, Mizeh u'mizeh hem ksuvim? Miraculously, the writing was written on both sides of the Luchos. Ordinarily, if you turn it round, you'll see what we call mirror writing. And over here, whichever way around you turn the Luchos, it just read the same. So maybe what that's teaching us is, the message of the Luchos is, you cannot have a Kilayim. You cannot look one way, this way up, and then when you switch it around, all of a sudden it looks different. The Torah Jew looks a Torah Jew every which way you look at him. Back to front to back, it all reads the same. You cannot have a Kilayim of part Egel, part Chamor. That's an inherent contradiction. And the message of the Luchos, Mizeh u'mizeh in Ksuvim, was to teach us that whichever way around you look at this person, if you're going to be that Chamor, the animal that represents the Torah, then you have to be Chamor both in the front and in the back. But you cannot have the head as one thing and the tail as something else. And Moshe Rabbeinu therefore says that if you're going to serve an eagle, but not just an eagle, the hide with the kilayim of part chamor and part eagle, then that is absolutely antithetical to the whole concept of the Luchos. The Luchos teaches us the exact opposite of the eagle. You cannot be a two-sided Jew. You can't be part chamor and part eagle. The writing has to read the same every which way you look at it. So Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos. Because Klal Yisrael had proven to be no longer compatible with the Luchos and its message of being Mizeh u'Mizeh in Ksuvim. So now we understand, now let's turn to the Haftarah. We have to understand, when you're talking about a Kilayim of an Egel and Chamor, what's worse than somebody who serves Avodah Zarah? It's somebody who serves Avodah Zarah, but also learns Torah at the same time. That's worse still. Why is that worse? Because somebody who serves the life of Avodah Zarah, and he's thrown free the yoke of the Torah, eventually he'll come round. And he'll realize there's no justification for the path that he's chosen. But if I'm combining with my Avodah Zarah in one pocket, but I've got Torah in the other, then it doesn't look that bad. It might be a bit of Avodah Zarah, but I have Torah as well. So I have the Tzad Chamor. I have the Tzad Chamor. So ultimately that's worse than just having the ego, because then there'd be no justification. So what does Eliyahu HaNavi tell Klal Yisrael? If you want to go with Hashem, go with Elohim. Ve'im Labal, l'chu achrov. You'd be better off going with the Baal alone than you would the Baal together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because if you try and combine the two, then Eliyahu HaNavi tells them, Admosai atem poischim b'shtei seifim. You can't be crossing both thresholds. That's a contradiction that cannot be reconciled. You cannot be looking eagle on one side and chamor on the other. You cannot have Baal on the one side and Elohim on the other. So that was our first question. Go with the Baal, is that better? Is that a valid option? Of course it's not a valid option. But choose that path, because then you're likely to come back. But if you're combining, you're being poseach al shtei seifim, then there's no comeback. And now we understand, what does it mean? The teichacha of Eliyahu HaNavi. What was Eliyahu HaNavi's teichacha? Ad mosai atem poischem b'shtei seifim. So the Levush said, that parallels Moshe Rabbeinu's teichacha. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's teichacha? fact that he broke the luchos. That the fact that he broke the luchos is exactly what Eliyahu HaNavi said to Klal Yisrael, Ad Mosa Atem Poishchem Poishchem B'Shtei Sifim. Look at the luchos, it's mizeh u'mizeh him ksuvim, whichever way you look at it, it's all the same. You cannot be crossing both thresholds. So really I think we've answered all four questions. Question number one was, what's the significance of the kilayim of Egel and Chamor? That's what we're explaining, it's the combination, this puzzle combination of Avodah Zarah and Torah at the same time. Question number two, why did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchos? Because the whole existence, the whole mahus, the nature of the luchos, mizeh or mizeh and ksuvim, is totally the opposite of the Egel. You cannot be two-sided. If you're going to be two-sided, then you're no longer worthy of receiving the luchos. Question number three was, how could Eliyahu HaNavi possibly tell them, if you want to go with the Baal, that's fine. Is that really fine? Of course it's not. What he was really saying was, don't be poseach hashtei sifim, because then there's no coming back. The fourth question was, what is the comparison between the teichacha of Eliyahu HaNavi and the teichacha of Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't give any teichacha, and the answer is he absolutely did. When he broke the luchos, that in effect is exactly what Eliyahu HaNavi was teaching Klal Yisrael. You can't be poseach al shtei sifim. You've got to be mizeh or mizeh heim ksuvim. There are many other instances, by the way, of Avodah Zarah. And the most obvious one in all of Navi, Lechoyah, would be, there's a whole story in the Nevi'im with Yerovam ben Nevat. Yerovam ben Nevat, the terrible idol worshipper himself, also set up in Klal Yisrael two calves, golden calves. He also made an egel. So we would have thought that Lechoyah is the most obvious haftarah for this week's parasha. Egel Azov, Egel Azov. But if you look in the parashim there, it's quite clear that he didn't have any joint kavanas. There was no hybrid there. The Malbim and others just explained he wanted to completely deter Klal Yisrael from having anything to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we understand, that therefore is the inappropriate haftarah for this week's parasha. Our parasha is all about being two-sided. Ad Mosayatim Poischem B'Shtei Se'ifim, that's exactly the parallel to our parasha. Are you a Luchos Jew, where you're Mizeh, or Mizeh in Ksuvim, or are you a part Egel, part Chamor Jew? Are you a part Elohim, part Baal? Ad Mosayatim Poischem B'Shtei Se'ifim, that's exactly the Haftarah of this week's parasha. Now, the Midrash that we quoted right at the beginning, which was this Yalkut Ruvein that says it was part Egel, part Chamor. So as I mentioned, I saw this Medrash quoted in the Ohr HaChaim HaKadosh. Now let's have a look in what context the Ohr HaChaim says it, and we'll see a remarkable thing. After the event, after the Egel was served, it says, Vayikach eso Egel asher osu. Moshe Rabbeinu took the calf that they made, Vayisroi po'esh, and he burnt it in fire. Now, the two words that seem to be completely superfluous are, of course, he took the egel, asher osu, that they made, obviously the egel that they made. So the Ohr HaChaim HaKadosh says the following cryptic words. Do you know what it means that he took the egel that they made? So he quotes that medrash. The eagle was in fact only half eagle, but it was also half chamor. And he says, do you know what it means that they burnt the eagle? Asher osu, says the Ohr HaChaim HaKadosh, don't think that they only burned the tzad of the eagle. They actually burned the tzad of the chamor as well. That's what it means. They took the egel asher osu that they made in its entirety. That's what the Ohr HaChaim explains. Now what does that mean? Why would you have thought that they should only burn the tzad egel? And if you would have thought so, why in fact did they burn the whole thing? According to what we've explained, it's half a little fella. I would have thought that which part should you burn? Only the tzad ego. That's the avodah zara tzad. There's nothing wrong with the tzad chamor. The tzad chamor, which represents the Torah, keep that half alive and well. Says the Eirach Chaim HaKadosh, no, chas v'shalom. Like we said before, it would be much better off if it would be total avodah zara. The minute you have part chamor and part ego, then the part chamor needs to be burnt as well. Because that ultimately is your whole engine. That's what's driving you, that's your justification, as it were, for having the tzad ego, which means that the chamor is also a treif. That needs to be burned as well. And you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of a kliyoka. The kliyoka in Parashas Shmini says the following. We know every animal, in order to be kosher, has to have two simonim. It has to have split hooves, and it has to chew the cud. It has one without the other, it's no longer kosher. So the kliyoka says the following. What about the chazir? The Torah tells us the chazir is not kosher. Why not? Only has one simon. Which simon is that? It has split hooves, it doesn't chew the cud. Now if you look in the pasuk, Pasuk says as follows, Hachazir, ki, because it has split hooves and doesn't chew the cud, it's not kosher. Is that how we would have written the pasuk? Because, or would we have written the pasuk despite? It's not because it has split hooves, it's despite the fact, although it has one simon of split hooves, unfortunately, it falls short on the second simon, says the kliyok, an unbelievable pshat. We know Rashi and Pashas Peleus. What does Esav do? Esav is compared to the chazir. Why, what does Esav do? He puts on a great show. He starts asking all these shailas to Yitzchak, just take meiser from this, says Rashi, you're like the chazir. What does the chazir do? It shows everybody its split hooves. Because that's its cover-up for the fact that it doesn't chew the cud. That's Esav. Such that, says the Kliyoka, the split hooves also now become a simon tuma. What's the score at the end of the day? It's not 1-1, it's 2-0. If you use your split hooves to cover up the fact that you don't chew the cud, then it's not the fact that, despite the fact you have split hooves, that you nonetheless don't chew the cud. To the contrary, if your split hooves are using as a cover-up, then that becomes part and parcel of the reason why the chazir is a behemoth tameah. And that's exactly what the Eirach Chaim is teaching us as well. If you have part egel and part chamor, so what's your justification for having the egel? But it's not so bad, because we also have the tzad chamor. You better burn the chamor as well. Vayikach etzel egel asher osu. They took the entire egel, even the part chamor, and they burnt that as well. Because that cannot be the justification for the egel. That's then being peseach al shtei se'ifim. So we have Eliyahu HaNavi telling us it's better to go with the Baal. Just don't be a chatzi egel, chatzi chamor Jew. Don't be part Baal, part Elohim. You want to go with Elohim? That's wonderful. If not, it's better to go to the Baal in its entirety. If not, we break the luchos. The luchos is mizeh u'mizeh hein ksuvim. Now, just in conclusion, what's that got to do with Purim? Parashat Ki Tisa always is the parasha of Purim, except in the leap year. So maybe the connection is as follows. There is a pasuk in Megillas Esther which says as follows. Esther Malka sends a message to Mordechai, but it's Saveyu al Mordechai. Now listen to the words and tell me what they remind you of. She wants to inquire, Lo Das al Mazer v'al Mazer. Al Mazer, al Mazer. What does that sound like? Mizer u'mizeh in ksuvim. It's not just a play on words. The Gemara in Megillah darshans that pasuk, and the Gemara tells us, Omer Rab Yitzchok, the message she was sending was to Mordechai was Shema, maybe Avru al Chamishe Chumshe Teiro, is the tzara that has befallen Klal Yisrael. Maybe that's a result of having been over Chamishe Chumshe Teiro. The ksiv bay about which it is written, Mizeh u'mizeh hin ksuvim. The pasuk in our parasha. What was she saying? I think I know why this tragedy has befallen Klal Yisrael. Lodas al mazeh u mazeh. They've got mizeh u mizeh problems. They've transgressed the Chamishei Chumshei Torah, about which it is written mizeh u mizeh in Ksuvim. Now, what does that Gemara mean? It's a riddle. Why couldn't she simply say they haven't kept the Torah? Why is that significant that the Torah, the Luchos, were mizeh u mizeh in Ksuvim? And perhaps the answer is as follows. Mordechai HaTzadik tells them, don't join the party. Have nothing to do with Achashverosh. Nothing to do with his Mishnah. And what do Klal Yisrael say? Achashverosh is the king over here, and we have to include him in our lives. How can we possibly reject him? Can you imagine what trouble we'll get into if we don't attend the party, if we don't bow down to Mordechai, if we don't bow down to Haman? They didn't reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu in any which way. They just said, listen, we can't possibly jeopardize the security of Klal Yisrael, and we have to get along with our neighbors and with our host. And they went to the party and they served, they bow down to Haman. So what does Esther Malka say to them? That's not mizeh u mizeh in ksuvim. If you think you can be a faithful Torah Jew and at the same time a loyal Achashverosh subject and a loyal Haman bower down, then that's not luchos. That's not the Torah. That's what she says. Lo das al mazeh al mazeh. Is this what's happening? She says that they were over chamishei chumshei Torah, about which it is written mizeh u mizeh in ksuvim. This is the egel all over again. This is part egel and part chamoy. This is part Elohim, part Baal. This is part Hashem, part Achashverosh. Lo das al mazeh u mazeh. I'm sorry, then the luchos have to be broken all over again. And what happens? Kimu v'kivlu, they will makabel the Torah afresh. Why would they makabel the Torah afresh? Because to an extent the luchos have been broken again. As Esther Malka said, you've transgressed the Torah about which it says, mizeh u mizeh ein ksuvim. This is the egel all over again. You cannot be poseach al shtei se'ifim. You cannot be part egel, part chamor. Because if you do, this is a tragic reenactment, once again, of the whole Maaser Egel. So we have to begin all over again. Just like at the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, they needed a new set of luchos, the luchos shviyos. That's what happened on Purim as well. What happened on Purim was, they needed to mekabel Torah afresh. Now, we discussed this in Yom HaNeroim, when we spoke about Hashem Hu Elohim, the whole avodah of Aseret Yimei Tshuva. But either way, it's no coincidence, Purim, Yom Kippurim, of course there is that remarkable parallel, but that will leave for another day. But at least what relates to our Purim is this concept of consistency. Not being poiseach al shtei se'ifim. To take an inward look and think to ourselves, are we perhaps ourselves on occasion guilty of being a part egel, part chamoy? Do we justify some of our misdemeanors by thinking, but it's not so bad because I also daven, I also learn, I also give tzedakah. Am I being poiseach al shtei se'ifim? Because if I am, then I'm not a luchos Jew. I'm an egel Jew, chas v'shalom. Part egel, part chamoy. And that's the lesson that had to be learned at the time of the egel, and that's the lesson that had to be learned at the time of Purim. You cannot be over chamishei chumshei Torah, v'ksiv bei mizeh u'mizeh im ksuvim. Because if you do, if you're over in that way, and you try and combine, as it were, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Achashverosh in your life, then you have to makabel Torah all over again. Kimu v'kivlu. This reminds me of